Welcome to the Hometown Foods Let's Talk Guthrie County. I'm your host, Marcus Mackey. Joining us today is Iowa Senator for District 12, Amy Sinclair. All right, Amy, so there is a bill waiting for the governor to sign it that would change some of the stuff in SNAP benefits. Can you go over that a little bit for me?
Sure, I'd be happy to go over that for you. Senate File 494 is a bill that deals with public assistance eligibility verification. It's about verifying income and assets. What the bill does is it establishes income and identity verification parameters for public assistance programs, and that includes SNAP and Medicaid, FIP, CHIP, all those programs that are under the Department of Health and Human Services, and it defines what an asset means, and essentially liquid assets, so that in personal property, excluding a vehicle, excluding a house, excluding retirement, those kinds of things. So it's essentially liquid assets. So it limits the income to 160% of federal poverty level. The feds say it has to be 130, but we've limited it to 160. And it limits those liquid assets that I described to $15,000, simply because, you know, folks with liquid assets of more than $15,000 and making more than 160% of federal poverty, you know, we kind of need to keep our social programs for folks who really need it, and feels like those are limits that are above the federal limit, but also in line with helping the Iowans who need it most. This stems from the fact that we've had over $40 million in overpayments in the SNAP program alone over the last few years. We've gotten fines from the USDA because we weren't managing it correctly. And so this is pushing us towards an electronic asset verification so that we don't have those error rates that cause us to overexpend our funds.
All right. And then the Senate also passed a bill that capped out pain and suffering for victims of truckers at $5 million. Can you go over that bill a little bit, please?
Sure. And that bill has bounced back and forth a couple times, so it's changed. The final bill ended up at a $5 million cap per victim for pain and suffering. So it's the non-economic damages. It's not your medical bills. It's not your car. It's not actual damages that you can quantify monetarily and objectively. All of those things are excluded from this and are paid in full. What this caps is that unquantifiable, the pain and suffering, as you describe it. So it caps it at $5 million per victim. We've seen a lot of just excessive rulings lately, jury verdicts lately. One recently, over $90 million in a medical malpractice. And the same thing is happening with big trucking companies. There are people who will sue those big trucking companies, even when the trucking company wasn't at fault in the accident, because their insurance companies will force a settlement because it's cheaper than fighting the actual loss. So putting some predictable limit on a lawsuit in that non-economic damage, that unquantifiable area, allows for insurance rates to be kept predictable. And that helps all of Iowa. It keeps our trucking system running. It keeps goods and services coming to our doors at a reasonable price. Never would I say that we shouldn't hold folks accountable for when they do things wrong. And this bill doesn't do that. It just sets a predictable upper limit on how much the non-quantifiable items can be sued for.
All right. And then there was also a bill that has gone to the governor's desk and signed into law that allows the hunting of raccoons year-round.
I forgot about that guy. So essentially what that does, not about hunting them, it can only be done for nuisance or for loss. So if you have an animal digging in your grain field and eating your corn, causing you loss to your productivity, you don't have to contact the DNR to shoot it if it's outside of season. So you have a raccoon out there eating your corn, taking away from your productivity. You can shoot that animal to stop the harm to your property. You can't shoot an animal within city limits. It has to be outside of city limits on ag land, those types of things. But this just allows you, a raccoon, a skunk, something that's causing damage to your property, those fur-bearing animals that are causing damage to your property, it allows you to get rid of that nuisance without contacting the DNR. Now, it does not include any animal that's on the endangered species list, federal register, but this is, like I say, it's raccoons and coyotes and skunks and those types of things that can cause nuisance damage to your property. This would let you shoot them without getting permission first.
All right, so kind of as you mentioned, just fur-bearing animals, no game animals, no endangered species, but...
Just fur-bearing animals, no game animals, no endangered species, just those animals. Years ago, we didn't have this problem because their fur had a monetary value, and so it was hunted and trapped for that monetary value. The value of fur doesn't exist anymore, so we're not keeping those fur-bearing nuisance species in check anymore, and they really are becoming a real problem to property owners.
All right, and then Senate File 496 has kind of made its way back and forth between the Senate and the House, amendments on both sides. Recently, it came back to the Senate from the House with an amendment that it would remove books in schools with graphic depictions of sex acts, and the Senate amendment, when they sent it back, said any description or visual depiction of a sex act as defined by Iowa law. Why was that change made?
So it goes back to what we sent them originally, and what we sent them originally was it contained several elements, 8 or 9 major elements. One was dealing with that books and curriculum and what's appropriate for children in our public K-12 schools. And when we have a definition in code 702.17 that is a sex act, when we're talking about things of that graphic in nature, those are not items that the same concepts can be taught to students without diving into that degree of detail in our public K-12 schools. I don't think anybody would disagree with me that we should not provide for children, elementary kids, middle school kids, high school kids, a book that shows pictures of people having sex. That's not what our public schools were designed for. That holds zero educational value in the long run that couldn't be achieved in other ways. And so when we have a definition in code of what a sex act is, and it's very graphic, we don't believe, as a legislature, we don't believe that our tax dollars should be providing materials for kids to see and read sex act. It's graphic. We're not talking about the Judy Blume and that soft discussion of human relationships and human interaction. We're talking about graphic, visual, verbal depictions of sex acts that are described in Iowa code. The legislature doesn't believe that those books belong in our public school. Now, we're not banning books. Those books can still be obtained in any, you know, bookstore, any online place where you can purchase books, Amazon. There's still likely lots of those books available in our public libraries. We're just saying for kids, describing a sex act to a child, it would be considered illegal if a pedophile were doing it. It shouldn't be in our classrooms and in our school libraries. And so we're not banning the books. If parents want to educate their kids using those resources, they can do that. We're just not going to have our public school teachers doing it. So it does that. It also limits what can be taught in human growth and development in the elementary years. We don't believe we should be talking to six-year-olds about graphic sex, and so we limit that for our elementary school. We believe parents should be able to consent to a whole host of things that are happening with their children in schools, including physical and mental health screenings. We think parents should have to consent for that, including anything that is prohibited, protected in the federal protection of pupil rights rules. We don't believe that students should be subjected to any of those things without parental permission, and so the bill does that. The bill also requires that the books that are in the school library be of searchable online database of their libraries. We just believe parents should have access to that database. We believe that the schools should be required to have policies and procedures that outline how a parent can protest curriculum or how they can review curriculum. And we also believe, and we've put into law, that parents are the ultimate authority in the education and upbringing of their child. Our court system has cited that way over and over and over again for over 100 years when cases have been brought forward about that exchange between schools and parents, that parents are the ultimate authority. Parents have the ultimate right to raise their children in any way they see fit, so long as it isn't child abuse, so long as it isn't criminal abuse to the child. The parents can raise them as they see fit. They can raise them to be Jewish. They can raise them to be atheist. They can raise them to understand their own sexuality or not. But those are decisions that parents ought to be making, not our public school system. And so when the final version of the bill ultimately rested on those items, that there are certain things that parents ought to opt into and give consent to before they happen at a public school, and that there are certain graphic sexual items that are already defined in Iowa code that simply shouldn't be happening in our public schools, that those should be left to the realm of parents and guardians to train their kids in.
That was today's Hometown Foods Let's Talk Guthrie County. Discover today the many advantages of shopping with your hometown team. Hometown Foods in Guthrie Center, Panora, and Stewart. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a recording of it online at raccoonvalleyradio.com under the podcast tab.